leaves office.
The father of my children had already been here before. And he used to say that the children were treated much better and that there was a lot of medical attention, but truly he was wrong.
Reporting from South Texas, I'm Renee Feltz for Democracy Now!
And that does it for today's show. Tune in for our special live coverage of the presidential inauguration on Friday, January 20th, from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern. We'll carry the official proceedings live, as well as analysis and voices from the streets. On Saturday, January 21st, we'll broadcast live from the Women's March on Washington from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern, bringing you voices from the stage and the march. Go to democracynow.org for details. And that does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkner, Meen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Sharina Nadura, and Andre Lewis, and Renee Feltz. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Finance Committee meets every third Thursday at 5 o'clock p.m.
On January 20th, during the coronation of Donald Trump, Grassroots News will host a very special show, The Soul Music in Movies, The Soul of Soundtracks. On From the Grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and commentary. From the Grassroots, with local and national political commentary provided by Landon Kroll and musical analysis by our art historian, Diane Johnson. From the Grassroots, January 20th from 8 until 10 p.m. on 90.7 FM, KBOO in Portland.
Good morning. My name is Abe Proctor. You're listening to the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. Joe is not with us today. It'll just be you and I for the next 60 minutes while we make an attempt to divine what is in store for our fair republic here as we sit on the eve of the inauguration of the 45th president, Donald J. Trump. Portland sits under a blanket of ice. Many of the local roads, and I'm sure you realize this if you've made any attempt to be out and about over the past week, many of the local roads represent an ice rink. It's dangerous out there. Please be careful. If you don't have to go anywhere, please don't go anywhere. If you do have to go anywhere, please investigate walking to where you need to get, rather than taking a vehicle of some kind. I've seen a lot of people slipping and sliding over the roads today. I've seen a lot of bicyclists attempting to navigate the roads over the last week. You people are far more brave than I. It's hard enough on four wheels. It's hard enough on 2 feet, let alone two wheels. Public schools have been closed for the better part of a week now. I'm sure all across the region there are parents who are discovering that their delightful little urchins were a lot more delightful when they were at school every day. Just one of those things that happens even with members of the family. If you all of a sudden have to spend all of your time with them, you start looking around for a different company. It's just one of those things. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I want to hear a couple of things from you, the listeners, this morning. First, what you're planning to do this weekend to mark the inauguration of our 45th President, Donald J. Trump. I'm also going to run down some of the things that are going on here in Portland. And I also want to hear how you think things are going to go the next 4 years. You know, and I don't want to hear just generic sort of progressive hand-wringing as we behold the awful monstrosity that is the Trump administration. You know, I don't want to hear you just say, oh, things are going to go to hell. I want to hear what exactly you think is going to happen. Here's an example. I predict in the next 4 years that a lot of Americans are going to get a lot sicker as the Affordable Care Act is repealed. And I'll talk about that a little bit more in a little bit more detail here as we move along. 503-231-8187. There's a bunch of stuff happening this weekend here in Portland to mark the inauguration of Donald Trump. I really encourage everybody to get out and take part in one or more of these events. I was talking about this as it happens the other day with a Republican friend of mine. And if you don't have a Republican friend, I encourage you to get at least one. It's a good idea on a number of levels. Not the least of which is, it's good to be reminded that those people in your life with whom you have an almost 180-degree political disagreement can nonetheless be decent human beings, decent and good human beings, who are perhaps open to being swayed by insightful and well-reasoned dialogue. It's a good idea. Find yourself a Republican friend if you can do it. Now, that said, we all know there's a lot of Republicans out there that you're probably better off not being friends with. So I was talking with this Republican friend of mine, and he said to me, well, you're going to turn out and protest. So what? What is the point? What do you get out of protesting? Nothing's going to happen. And probably somebody's just going to show up and break some windows and make everybody look bad. Well, here's why it's worthwhile to protest. You know, maybe in immediate terms, yeah, nothing's going to happen. Yeah, you turn out and you protest, you march around, you sing, you chant, you meet people of like mind and you feel better. Did anything happen? I don't know. But here's what happens collectively and over the long term. It does make a difference. If there's one thing that politicians everywhere, regardless of where they are in the world, if there's one thing that they fear, if there's one thing that keeps them up at night, it's the vision of people in the streets by the thousands. It makes them realize that perhaps they're not as safe, perhaps they're not as comfortable as they believe themselves to be. It makes them realize that perhaps their agenda is not as sure as they thought it was. If everywhere that Donald Trump goes during his presidency, if everywhere he goes, he's met by thousands of angry people in the streets, he's going to notice that. It is going to get to him. He is going to realize that he does not have the support and the adulation of the American people the way he wants. He's going to realize that he's going to face resistance at every turn. And he is going to realize that the consequences of his presidency and of his actions are going to come due, perhaps as early as the next midterm election. He needs to see this. Everywhere he turns, he needs to see people in the streets. He needs to know that millions upon millions of Americans chose his opponent and not him. He needs to know just how deeply resented he is and how deeply opposed his agenda is. So while there may not be an immediate payoff from inauguration protests this weekend, I mean, Trump's not going to immediately back down from all of his proposed policy positions, his proposed courses of action, no. But he's going to receive a message that the ice upon which he treads is thin. That's why we need to turn out and protest this weekend. So there's a lot going on. This Thursday, the 19th of January, 2:30 to 6 p.m. Pioneer Courthouse Square, the anti-Betsy DeVos walkout and protest. Ms. DeVos, of course, is the eminent, well, that's the wrong word to use, inevitable Secretary of Education under President Trump. That's being organized by the Portland Student Action Network from 2:30 to 6 p.m. this Thursday, Pioneer Courthouse Square. On Friday, Inauguration Day itself, there's an event called Rise Up and Resist Fascism, 3:30 to 9 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square. This is organized by the Direct Action Coalition. And as of yesterday, more than 9,500 people had registered to attend this event. That's based on the Direct Action Coalition's Facebook page. The same day, from noon to 3 p.m., a student walkout on the day of Trump's inauguration. This is going to take place at Portland State University. There's also something going on that same day at Pioneer Courthouse Square at noon called the Inauguration Day Flag Burning Extravaganza. I don't really know a whole lot about that event, but judging from its title, it might be fairly self-explanatory. The big one, Saturday the 21st, the Women's March on Portland. This is affiliated with the National March in Washington, D.C., that's expected to draw hundreds of thousands. That's going to take place downtown, starting at the west end of the Morrison Bridge from noon to 4 p.m. The march is going to cover a shortish route along the waterfront and through downtown Portland. It's from noon to 4, as I mentioned, this Saturday the 24th. This is going to attract something like 30,000 plus. As of yesterday, more than 29,000 people have indicated on Facebook that they plan to attend this event. And you need not be a woman to take part in this. If there are women in your life whom you love and whom you support and about whose welfare you are concerned, especially in light of the incoming regime, turn out and support those women who mean something to you. I myself am going to be at this march on Saturday. Also on Saturday, the United Front Against the Trump Agenda, a rally and march at Szymanski Park in Southwest Portland from 10 to 11:30 a.m. That's organized by Portland Jobs with Justice. And given that this ends at 11:30, I imagine it's probably going to dovetail nicely into the Women's March on Portland starting at noon. So that's just a small sampling of what's happening this weekend here in Portland, where you will have the opportunity as a citizen to show up and show your resistance to this undemocratic proto-fascist regime headed by perhaps the most unqualified and illegitimate president the United States has ever seen. And yes, I am including George W. Bush in that calculation. There's a lot to talk about today. And I want to touch on a lot of it fairly broadly, but with some specificity, as I mentioned earlier. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. And before we go to the phones, I want to get something out on the table. There is an intelligence dossier, not an official intelligence dossier, that was, if you'll pardon the expression, leaked to the media this past week or so. I have to emphasize right out of the gate that nothing in this dossier is verified. Nothing in this dossier is proven to be true. But at the same time, nothing in this dossier has been officially refuted by intelligence sources here in the United States. This was this report has been widely attributed to a gentleman named Christopher Steele, who is a retired British intelligence officer. He was hired back during the primary season of this presidential campaign by Trump's Republican opposition to dig up some dirt on him. So this is basically a dossier containing opposition research on Donald Trump. After Donald Trump secured the Republican nomination, Mr. Steele's services were retained by an anonymous Democratic donor to continue the opposition the opposition research on Mr. Trump. Now, what this dossier claims, and again, I must stress that this is unverified, is that for several years, Russia has been cultivating the friendship and assistance of Mr. Trump for the purpose of weakening and encouraging splits within the alliance of Western nations against the ideological alliance, you might say, that has prevailed since the end of the Second World War. Now, let that sink in for a minute. Whether or not this turns out to be verified, the mere notion that we're discussing this right now is absolutely extraordinary. A popular American figure, not even involved in politics, if this the contents of this report are to be believed, not even yet involved in politics when Russia began courting him, has been approached by a foreign government with the express intention of weakening ties between Western nations, of dissolving the post-war consensus. That's an extraordinary thing. And most extraordinary in this unverified report is that Russia has managed to accumulate information about Donald Trump sufficient to effectively blackmail him. And among the items that the report mentions, among these things that the Russian government has amassed to blackmail Mr. Trump, includes a report of a visit by Mr. Trump to a fancy hotel in Moscow where he allegedly, unverifiedly, retained the services of several prostitutes for purposes that I can't reveal on a family radio show on KBOO. However, thanks to George Takei, formerly Mr. Sulu on Star Trek, we now have the phrase in the lexicon, tinkle, tinkle, little czar. And that makes it all worthwhile. Whether or not the contents of this report are ever verified, the fact that we now have tinkle, tinkle, little czar just makes me happy. Let's go to the phones. Who's first? Corey, good morning.
Well, good morning. Thanks for the show. Well, I wanted to make a prediction. I don't think he's going to make it through the presidency, and ironically, probably will get impeached by his own party. But I just think that, in effect, he's already accomplished his agenda by this horrible round of cabinet choices he's made. And that's what I think is going to happen.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit? How do you think his cabinet choices have furthered his agenda or even accomplished his agenda?
Just by the same old power structure that's already been in place.
So reinforcing control by plutocracy, as it were.
Yes.
I gotcha. Okay.
And I just one more brief comment. I wanted to point out that how even Congressman John Lewis, when you talk about the pretty much unsubstantiated Russian hacking,
mm-hmm.
I'm a little bit disturbed about this because it's sort of promulgating the new Red Scare. And,
All right.
Okay. So I'll let somebody else chime in. Thanks.
Hey, thanks very much for the call. I think I get what you're after there, caller, with the whole John Lewis fracas. I don't know that I would categorize the current role of Russia in American geopolitics as akin to another Red Scare. I think there's something fundamentally different now about what Russia is as a nation, and also about what the United States is as a nation. But to the extent that Russia is once again now being made into the giant boogeyman as it was during the Cold War, I think there's something to that. You mentioned John Lewis, and I'm glad you did, because, of course, John Lewis recently and famously in an interview mentioned that he believes Donald Trump to be an illegitimate president. Now, there's a lot of argument to be had about what exactly illegitimate or legitimate mean in this context and why. And you could make an argument that Trump's ascension to the presidency came by not entirely legitimate means. But more revealing in terms of the psyche of the president-elect is the reaction that Congressman Lewis and his words drew Now, John Lewis, as anyone who's been paying attention to anything for the past several decades can tell you, is a civil rights icon, a lion of the struggle for racial and civil justice in this country. This is a man whose skull was fractured by the billy clubs of Alabama state troopers. This is a man who was attacked by police dogs, who was hosed down by high pressure water hoses. This is a man who has done time, who has shed blood for the advance of justice in the United States. So he suggested that, that Donald Trump was an illegitimate president. Trump, quite predictably, blew up and fired back through his preferred means of communication, Twitter, at John Lewis and insulted the guy. Now, this fits a pattern if you've been paying attention to our president-elect. I think he's a deep narcissist. And like narcissists, he's deeply insecure. Once you get past that layer of bullying and bluster, he's deeply insecure. Articles about him over the course of his career have suggested that above all, perhaps even more than acquiring great wealth and power, he has wanted to be accepted by financial and cultural elites. Coming up as a real estate developer in Manhattan, what he really wanted more than anything was to be part of and accepted by elite New York society. But they never really gave him that acceptance, and it's rankled him ever since. Last week, when Meryl Streep, a beloved and iconic actress, denounced him during an awards acceptance speech, again, he blew up. He blew up and lashed back at her at Twitter. When celebrity after celebrity refused to perform at his inauguration this week, he had the same sort of reaction. He blew up. This is a guy who desperately wants to be one of the cool kids. He desperately wants their approval. And when he doesn't get it, he blows his top. Some might suggest that this is a quality that makes him fundamentally unfit for the presidency. I would be one of those people. So the John Lewis example, despite showing us once again just what a ludicrous sort of guy the president-elect is, gives us this look into his psyche and shows us once again how unfit he is for the job. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You can also write to us on Facebook at facebook.com/AbeAndJoe or on the Twitter machine, which I would like to see get more use during this program. It's a really nice way to quickly get comments from our listeners out on the air. And it's a nice way for those of you who might not be in a position to call to quickly dash off a comment or a question. And you can do that at HonestAbe72. That's on Twitter. Let's go back to the phones. Roger, good morning.
Thank you for the show.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I might be taking this in a little bit different direction. You asked, your question was, how are we feeling about the next 4 years?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm more concerned about the Democratic Party and how they've been weakened and lost so much, so many seats, and in both houses, and not only that. And what happened during the primary, which nobody's talking about, which I believe the Russians were trying to reveal, if it's true, that there was some shenanigans going on with Debbie Wasserman Schultz and trying to block.
You're referring to the fact that the Democratic nomination was essentially gamed by party insiders in favor of Secretary Clinton over an insurgent campaign like Bernie Sanders.
That's absolutely right. Okay. Correct. I've kind of lost faith I've lost faith in the Democratic Party because of this. And you know, Bernie would have been able to carry a lot of independents. I know I'm rehashing a lot of things here, mm-hmm. but the fact is, what is the Democratic Party going to do to be able to help us? I mean, right now, we can march all we want, and I'm going to the march. I've done it when Reagan was in power, but. I don't know where that really takes us. You know, we need to somehow get control of the Democratic Party and get them steered in the right direction, back to supporting workers and unions. And, where are we going to go with the Democratic Party? Because what are we going to do if we don't have them?
Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate the question. That's a good one. I think the answer might be, it might have less to do about the Democratic Party itself and more to do with what do we do as progressives to push the discourse and the body politic leftward. And I think if you want to operate through the Democratic Party as a medium, that's fine. But I think that begins at the local level. It begins at every single election. And that involves choosing candidates who are good progressives, who are strong liberals, regardless of their party affiliation. Many of them may happen to be Democrats. Many of them may not. Also, along similar lines, we've talked many, many times on this program about the role of third parties and whether the answer to the conundrum faced by liberals in the United States for decades now, whether that answer lies in third parties. And the answer thus far, I think, has been yes and no. If you talk about presidential elections, no, the answer is clearly no. Not one of the many candidates put up by third parties or fourth parties over the past several presidential election cycles have stood a chance of winning. Why? Because there doesn't exist a sufficient political and organizational framework undergirding those people to catapult them into the presidency. If we want a viable third-party presidential candidate, the work needs to begin at occasions just like right now. We just had a presidential election. Now is the time, and we'll use the Green Party as an example. Now is the time to start electing Greens to local offices, to city councils, to mayorships, to soil and water boards, and on and on and on. And in 2 years, to state legislatures. Now is the time, if you want a viable third-party movement, now is the time to start building it. But absent that, if you're a Democrat, if you're a believer in the Democratic Party, if you still remember the time when it was a robust champion of the working class and of organized labor, now's the time to start supporting Democrats who are true progressives, who are strong liberals, who embody the values that we all hold dear. That's what you do. You reject watered down, milquetoast, slightly left of center, corporate friendly Democrats. You reject those people in favor of actual liberals. I think that's the answer there. 503-231-8187. We're talking today about how you here in Portland are going to celebrate, and I'm putting air quotes around that, the inauguration of our 45th president. And I'm also looking to hear how you think the next 4 years are going to go. Pear writes into the Facebook page, that's facebook.com/Abe and Joe, to say, I hope America will improve democracy at home instead of selling a shoddy product to the rest of the world. Right on, Pear. That is absolutely the case. Now, I mentioned at the top of the show that one of my predictions for the next 4 years is that people in the United States are going to get a lot sicker. And all indications point to the fact that the Affordable Care Act will be no more, probably sooner rather than later in the next Congress. The Congressional Budget Office has put forth a few estimates about the effects of the repeal of Obamacare. Here are just a couple of the bullet points the CBO put out. The number of people who are uninsured would increase by 18 million in the first new plan year following enactment of the bill. This is the bill to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Later, after the elimination of the ACA's expansion of Medicaid eligibility and of subsidies for insurance purchased through the ACA marketplaces, that number would increase to 27 million and then to 32 million in 2026. Premiums in the non-group market for individual policies purchased through the marketplaces or directly from insurers would increase by 20% to 25% in the first new plan year following enactment. The increase would reach about 50% in the year following the elimination of the Medicaid expansion and the marketplace subsidies, and premiums would almost double by 2026. That is in 10 years. So literally, the election of Donald Trump and his tacit endorsement of the entire Republican platform is going to kill people. That's the direction we're going to take in the next 4 years. A lot more dead Americans because they don't have health care. 503-231-8187. Who's next? Corey, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Abe. I'm glad you just mentioned that, because I think that with those dead Americans, a lot of those dead Americans are going to be people that voted for Donald Trump. And
yep.
There's going to be a rude awakening, and I think it's going to happen sooner than later. You mentioned what's going to happen in the next 4 years. I know for me, I've been iced in the past couple of days, and what I've been doing is watching a lot of cable news. I'm watching MSNBC, CNN, the one that I won't mention. And what I've been seeing, and this is something that's going to discuss the black community, I've seen a lot of black evangelicals out on television the past several days out there supporting Donald Trump. And I find this to be somewhat hilarious, because I think what's going to happen is in the next 4 years, you're going to see a huge fissure in the black community. You're going to have the black evangelicals versus the black intellectuals, because I don't understand how some of these men can get out there and preach the gospel and support this man. And I think that hypocrisy is going to smack them in the face. You can't have it both ways. If this is the man that you support as a religious person, and me, I'm a black agnostic. I'm like a rare unicorn, so I'm fine. But as you're having these conversations, especially with my family members, well, you know, he's the president. You got to support him. And I'm thinking to myself, do you understand some of the things this man has said and done to not just, you know, black people of color? And if you look at what he said, I'm glad what you mentioned about John Lewis. I had a chance to meet him a couple of years ago. What this man has done, he is just greatness personified. To go after him in such a petty way, I think is dangerous. So I think you're going to see that the next 4 years, just like I said, a fissure, even more of a fissure in the black community. And finally, with that, everything that you're seeing right now, his appointments, this isn't Donald Trump. This is Steve Bannon. Hmm. And that's even a scarier thought. I think that if you look at Tillerson, if you look at some of the things that they're promoting, this is not Donald Trump does not have the intellectual capacity to choose from these people. This is coming from Bannon, and I think that's even scarier, because this is going to be a Bannon cabinet, and I find that to be somewhat frightening. There might be a rift between those two, because I think that having someone like that directing your cabinet picks, and if you go back to Breitbart, and that's what I did over the weekend too, you look at what Breitbart has promoted and look at Steve Bannon, look at his cabinet, it's pretty cut and dry what he's trying to do. He's trying to make some fundamental changes that are going to hurt the most vulnerable of us. So, yeah, that's my take. Like I said, you're going to see some deep soul searching in the black community in the next 4 years, like who we are. And, you know, you can trot out Steve Harvey, who I think is a clown. You can trot out, you know, he had the boxing promoter. That is a murderer. No one mentioned that. You have someone like President Obama, and, you know, he comes out with his preacher, but Don King is a literal murderer. He has murdered people, and he's out there with the president, and no one's saying anything, and that's just like, this isn't culture in a lot of ways. So I'll leave it at that. Thanks for your show, man.
Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah, number of interesting points there. I have to say, in Donald Trump's defense, I think he's assembled one of the most diverse groups of elderly white male billionaire industrialists for his cabinet that we've ever seen. And on the question of evangelical support for Donald Trump, now that Corey mentioned specifically support from black evangelicals, which is its own sort of conundrum. But larger than that, if you call yourself a Christian, how is it that you support this guy? Now, the statistics, and I quoted these statistics a couple of weeks ago, I don't have them at hand right now, but the evangelical support for Donald Trump in this election trumped, if you'll pardon the pun, that for George W. Bush in either of his two wins, the first of which he actually lost, the second he actually won. So what is it? If you're a Christian, how do you support Donald Trump? Which Christian value of his is it that you're getting behind? I'm really confused about that. If you are a Christian and you do support Donald Trump, I would really like to hear that. I suspect that has nothing in the end to do with values at all. Otherwise, you couldn't support this guy. I suspect it has to do with tribal political identity. I suspect it has to do with white racial identity. And I suspect it has to do with misogyny. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Who's next? Joe, good morning.
Hey, about time. I am enjoying the show, though. Three quick points, I guess.
Okay.
I think if I were talking to John Lewis, I'd be telling him, yeah, we need to investigate, but not the Red Russians, the Red Republicans, the ones that gerrymandered and the ones that lost 75,000 votes in Detroit and the ones that won't allow
right.
inspection of all the electronic voting
right.
records, a very close computer CIA cyber scan of all that stuff, all the... You know, the disenfranchisement, all this stuff needs to be investigated by the CIA, made public, and those are the Reds. It's like we're not after the red herring Russians, we're after the red sharks, the Republicans right here in this country that have done all this and gotten away with it, not only at the federal level, but the state levels. And so that's what I'd be telling them, and the only way we're going to solve that is to insist on paper ballots and open scanning that's not online, and... You know, the people have got to demand this, and that's what the Democratic Party ought to be doing to resuscitate itself, is demanding on accurate, you know, fair elections, reliable elections. So, yeah, the wrong Reds, man. We're after the Red Sharks. And as far as my predictions, they're going to drain the swamp, all right. They're going to get all the alligators all lined up, and then they're going to go after savings and loan and Social Security and every nickel and dime they can get out of the federal government. They're going to drain. They're going to pull the plug with all the teeth sitting there gnashing, and all the little fish like us are going to be gashing. And
yeah, that's true. Yeah, we've already described in some detail on this show Paul Ryan's plan to dismantle Medicare.
Yeah,
absolutely
well,
right.
Somebody ought to get more Greg Palast points on how they actually got the election up to hers up and say, hey, why aren't you investigating this? Why isn't the media, why aren't we calling the media and saying, hey, why aren't you investigating this? You know, it's like Greg Palast, I think, detailed 9 different ways that they pulled
yep.
plugs on the election.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
25% of the votes were no paper trail. Hello.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll let somebody else on. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Hey, thank you very much for the call. We also can't forget this fact, and I know we've hammered on this show a number of times. This was the first presidential election to take place without the full protection of the Voting Rights Act following that disastrous Supreme Court decision a couple of years ago. Coming up today on KBOO, at 9 on Alternative Radio, Stephen Cohen warns of a reheated Cold War with Russia and the dangers of a new arms race. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, your daily news magazine. At 11, on stage and studio, D-May Roberts brings you new expressive works premiere of Ignite, plus stories from McLaren Youth Facility. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Gallivan interviews painter and glass artist Alex Hirsch about her new show, Once Asunder. All this and more coming up today on your community-supported radio station, KBOO. This is Abe Proctor, and you're listening to the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Program. Joe could not be with us here today. We're talking about a couple of things today. First, how Portland and how you, the listeners, plan on welcoming our new president as he is inaugurated this weekend. And secondly, how you think the next 4 years are going to look. Here's something that really concerns me, and I'm going to go against my own request right now. At the top of the show, I asked for specific scenarios, not just for sort of a general tones of alarm, but I'm going to give you some general tones of alarm right now. I think perhaps the deepest damage that the Trump campaign and now the looming Trump presidency have done to the American body politic is that they have re-legitimized and normalized racist language and racist violence as part of the American political discourse. Think about what's okay now because of the Trump campaign. Think about the language and the spirit that was animated by his campaign. Think about the fact that the former head of an alt-right, racist, proto-fascist website is now part of Trump's inner circle. Consider now what is once again considered legitimate in the United States of America. I think that the next 4 years are going to see a dramatic increase, and we've already begun to see this.
I'm not conjuring this out of thin air. We're going to see a dramatic increase in racially motivated hate crimes, in racially motivated violence, in racially motivated speech. There is a deep ugliness in the American body politic that's been there as long as we've been here. It has its roots in slavery, and it persists to this day. And for a long time, conservative politicians could only speak to that part of the body politic in a sort of code with racist dog whistles. But since Trump has come along, the dog whistle has been thrown aside. And now we see the naked, racist chunk of the American electorate that has always been there. My worry over the next 4 years is the extent to which this group of voters, this group of Americans, feels empowered to act on their darker impulses. That's what worries me. Susan writes into the Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, to say, to respond to your query, what the next 4 years will be like, I don't think we'll immediately have the answer. I suspect what will transpire is that after a period, maybe a month or two or even a few months, Mr. Trump will begin to unravel, perhaps to implode or self-destruct. His staff may step in to prevent this, but I do not see his behavior changing. It is my view he cannot help himself, and he will continue to react and overreact, and the tweeting will go on unabated. His absolute inability to control or contain himself portends poorly for all of us. Susan, I think that is absolutely spot on. 503-231-8187. Who's up next? Edie, good morning.
Good morning. I have a question about something you mentioned for the calendar events. I want to let you know about more information and where you can find information about those of us that are a resisting trust. And I want to tell you a little bit about the answer I finally gotten after 58 years wondering why do people do these things that to me seem so crazy, dishonest, and cruel. So first of all, my question. Thursday, I know that there's a student-led walkout meeting at Santa Clara Square.
2:30.
Mm-hmm. I'm also wondering what, and there's a flag burning at 12 noon before that, but I'm wondering what are the... there's information both 3:30 and 2:30 for the Pioneer Square, and there's some folks confusing about folks about that.
I'll run down those again. Go ahead.
And then if people want to get more information, they can go to community events of the AFD-PDX.org. It's the Alliance for Democracy Community Events Calendar.
AFD-PDX.org?
Yes.
Okay.
So, for example, today from 5 to 8, there's a rally in Hillsborough for Hispanic and migrant rights. And it's from 7 to 9, there's the Bernie PDX Art Night sign making event. So, there's a lot of stuff going on with that. Also, the January 28th, there will be some more artwork and following through on what artists of all different types and ethnic and types of art can do to keep energizing and agitating folks. And the question that I had was partially answered at a workshop that we'll be having similar ones going on that we had at the Sunnyside Community House, in which we had peacemaking and nonviolent civil disobedience and legal rights and communications and media and photography and legal support and things like that. What I heard was when they hooked up different folks, the electrodes, and were examining what's going on, when they were claiming to have certain values but acting contrary to that, that cognitive dissonance created discomfort. But when they found a way to lie to themselves about it, it gave them a better high than cocaine.
Oh my.
It was a better pleasure and a longer-lasting pleasure. And so I guess people are lying to themselves because the pain of powerlessness or self-disrespect or self-distrust is so horrible. And to counter that, I want us to always emphasize the great joy and inner peace and power and energy and sense of connectedness and wholeness we get with integrity to our values and ways in which we don't have to be perfect, but we don't have to always get the immediate perfect results we want. But there is value in being at protests or doing artwork or talking to people one by one. And we move folks who are a little bit different from us and opposed to us. If we just go with common ground and respect and compassion, empathy. And I think what's behind it all is we either have love or fear. They're afraid, and so they don't fight for what's right. Or they're afraid, so they doubt their own perception. Or they're afraid that they're going to be ridiculed. And for those of us who care about biblical teachings, I could go on for hours about the biblical message about that would give us all the power to resist this presidency, this corruption that led to it, and to the whole agenda. The Bible is full of why devout Christians and Jews should resist, and the rewards of resisting, and the moral demands that we resist and how we go about it.
Choose love is what you're saying.
And integrity.
That was that was beautifully said, what you just ran down for us. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
So where will I find out the information? You had some other things I didn't have on my list of where I'm going.
I will in just a moment. I will run through that list again. I've also seen calendars of protest events at both the Oregonians website and at the Portland Mercury's website.
Portland Indie Media.
And Indie Media. And also the site you just recommended.
I have the...
All right. Thank you so much for the call. I really appreciate that, Evie, and your positive message. Unfortunately, we had to let you go there. Okay. To briefly run down the list I brought out at the top of the show. Thursday, the 19th, there's just one on my list here. The anti-Betsy DeVos walkout and protest, 2:30 to 6. Pioneer Courthouse Square. On Friday, which is Inauguration Day itself, starting at noon, Pioneer Courthouse Square will host a Inauguration Day flag burning extravaganza. Don't know much of anything about that, but the title I think probably says it all. Noon to 3 p.m., a student walkout, Portland State University. And then 3:30 to 9, Pioneer Courthouse Square, rise up and resist fascism. Then on Saturday, the big one, the Women's March on Portland, starting noon, the west end of the Morrison Bridge. Just before that, 10 o'clock to 11:30, the United Front Against the Trump Agenda rally and march. And that's the one Evie just mentioned, Shemansky Park, Southwest Portland, 10 o'clock a.m. on Saturday the 21st. That one ends at 11:30, just before the Women's March begins at noon. So if you wanted a doubleheader, there's your opportunity. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Program. My name's Abe Proctor. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. We're talking about protests for the inauguration weekend here in Portland. We're also talking about how you, the intelligent, informed, progressive listener, believe the next 4 years will play out. Let's go back to the phones. Paula, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to say I love your show for
Thank
one
you.
Thing.
Thank you very much.
Secondly, I'm 66. I'm retired, and I am going to be marching this Saturday for the first time since I protested the Vietnam War.
Right on. Good for you.
University of Minnesota in the 70s. So I'm super excited. couple dozen of my friends and extended family, we're all meeting, and I'm just cranked to do it. So go Portland, go Minneapolis. We all seem to have, always seem to have a good turnout for those kinds of things. But secondly, on one of your subjects, in terms of the possible and eventual, I guess, repeal of the Affordable Care Act, I have an idea, but I don't know how we can do it. And I know it isn't the first time it's been thought of, but what about simultaneously to repealing the Affordable Care Act, we the people somehow repeal our senators and congresspeople's health care, since their health care is paid for out of our tax dollars? We, the people, are paying for something that they get, they don't pay for, they get for the rest of their lives. It's universal health care, just the very thing that they want to take away from us.
Are you suggesting we all ought to be in the same boat?
I am. Isn't that something?
If only that were in our power to do.
If only if that were in our power. However, it really is in our power. I just don't know how we get it all going. I certainly know that obviously the people in Congress and the senators, I'm sure there would be some in our corner, but I mean, that's clearly the answer to the problem. Health care should be absolute a birthright. And not this contentious, thing that it's grown to be. And it's something that we have taken for granted, I think, since it was passed. And now that we're about to lose it, suddenly we're paying more attention. And I don't know how we get the ball rolling, but boy, absolutely, we should all be in the same boat.
Wow, I've just been thinking about that since you said it. Imagine if the vote to repeal the Affordable Care Act also revoked congressional health care benefits. What
Absolutely.
A different place we would be in.
What a different place.
Hey, thank you so much for the call.
You're very
and
welcome.
I think we're going to go ahead and appoint you our Minneapolis bureau chief, if that's all right.
There you go. I will take that on.
Hey, thanks so much for the call.
You're welcome. Bye.
503-231-8187. Who's next? Jack. Good morning, Jack.
Yeah, in relation, as for what she said, there's also the threat to defund sanctuary cities.
Right.
And along that line, I don't know how this would be achieved, but, the citizens send more money to Washington than Washington sends back to the cities. So if there were any way for people to quit paying their taxes to all the cities that are defunded, that would be the way to achieve that. But or it would be a statement, at least. It would be chaos, actually. But that's not really what I called about. I just want to respond to her immediately. But what I'm calling about is to point out that this particular election and the transition is so full of skullduggery and cloak and dagger. It's just I don't know if we've ever seen anything quite like this before. Just a quick little overview here. The supposed emails of Hillary were not hacked. They were leaked. Mm-hmm. They were leaked from inside the DNC. There's a lot of support. There's a lot of evidence that supports this. Not only that, but the person who's attributed as the leaker was murdered. I don't know if you're aware of that. He was murdered.
No, I'm not. And it's just, go ahead.
I can't remember his name. You just have to just Google DNC email leaks murder Washington. The guy was murdered on the streets of Washington, and nothing was stolen from him. Okay, that's really spooky to begin with. Then we get all the way down the line to the dossier, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the dossier. I mean, how do you interpret that? I'll just leave you with this: there is a faction fight going on inside the intelligence community, And that is a shot across the bow of the Trump juggernaut. Okay? And I'll just leave it at that. And thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for the call. You're right. There is a growing mountain of evidence to suggest that there are rival factions within the federal law enforcement system here in the United States, which led to a sort of selective enforcement. That's not quite the right term, but it led, for example, to a disproportionate emphasis on the email situation of Hillary Clinton and a smaller, also disproportionate emphasis on what was, and I'm going to disagree with the caller here at this point, illegal hacking of the American electoral process by actors who have since been traced back to Russian intelligence. But yes, there appears to be a schism within the FBI in particular that in all likelihood had a measurable impact on the outcome of the election. But that's a subject I want to save for a different show, at least in terms of digging in greater detail. Steve writes into the Facebook page, facebook.com/AbenJoe, to say it wouldn't matter if congressional health care policies were revoked. Our legislators can afford El Primo policies, even if we took them away. And that is also, unfortunately, true. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Who's next? Karen, good morning.
Oh, good morning. How are you this morning?
Very well. How are you?
Oh, good. I just wanted to make a few comments about undocumented folks. And I want to do this in the context of trying to raise a little consciousness. The debate is often framed in humanitarian terms, and that is also a good perspective. But I wanted to emphasize that we owe undocumented people a debt. That illegality, according to Aviva Chomsky's book Undocumented, was invented after 1965 because she says it was needed to sustain the New World Order. And that the employer sanctions were suspended in 2005 after Hurricane Katrina so that migrant laborers could be used by federal contractors to clean up and rebuild the city of New Orleans because nobody else wanted to do that job. That was a dangerous, dirty, really hard job. And undocumented folks are employed in large numbers in agriculture, of course, and meat packing and cleanup after environmental disasters, as I just mentioned.
And construction.
Yeah, construction. She says that they sustain the economy and that the system is fundamentally unjust. And it creates a subordinate workforce. We can all see this without legal status so that it can be exploited.
Yeah, a permanent underclass.
That's right.
Yeah.
And she says there are some parallels with the treatment of African Americans in the way in which criminal status follows both undocumented people and many black people into every area of life, so that we have also many black people who are being exploited in the prisons, and we have undocumented who are like convicted felons living in what she calls an internal exile or civic death. And I just think if we can only see also, okay, so exploitation, but also how our policies internationally have impacted people in Mexico and Central America, so that Monsanto flooded Mexico with cheap grain and drove a whole lot of farmers out of business. And then our policies in Central America at one point in El Salvador, one-fifth of the population, because of our policies, were refugees. Okay, and we bear this burden as a people. We've benefited from this. I am so tired of hearing these folks getting scapegoated when we have committed crimes against them. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you.
That and that there were 200 or 300 folks gathered for a sanctuary meeting downtown, and it mostly interfaith folks, and that people are really going to try to do something to help support our undocumented folks and the children and the community. So,
And I think we're going to have to leave it there. I apologize, but we're simply running out of time. You're absolutely correct, though. Any discussion about undocumented labor in the United States needs to touch on the actual economic contribution contributed by undocumented workers and how much American citizens depend on that and how dramatic their lives would be, dramatically their lives would be changed if Trump's mass deportation plans, for example, were to be put into effect. Thank you, everybody who contributed to the conversation today. I'm sorry that we couldn't get to all of you on the phones. We must resist. We must push back against this regime. It begins this weekend, and it lasts for the next 4 years. And we are going to continue on this program to let you know how you can fight back in various ways, the most important of which is getting your body out on the street and showing the little czar that he is not legitimate and he is not wanted. And that once his 4 years are up, we will usher him off the stage. Thanks, everybody. This has been the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on KBOO 90.7 FM, and we'll be back at you next week.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The events committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held. To request notice of board meeting in writing, please email Monica at KBOO.